Log Talk Radio.
What's happening, everybody? And welcome to the Blog Talk Radio Network. And if you were hearing my voice, you've reached the K Thompson Live Show. We had a little technical difficulty earlier this evening, but we're back on track now. This is a Wednesday evening, April 24th. And my name is Citizen Payne, and you are, lady.
I am K Thompson, and welcome to K Thompson Live, everyone. And we have an exciting show for you today, or tonight. And our guest, as a matter of fact, Eric is Junius Williams.
All right.
You know, and he has a new book out, and he's going to be talking about it tonight, and we are going to be reaching Junius as soon as we, can. As a matter of fact, in a couple of seconds. Rise Up North. Now, Junius was is still in the movement, you know, in the movement of the whole renewing of the city of Newark. And Newark is right on the map.
Right, right.
Really important, very political.
That we'll be talking to Mr. Williams in a few minutes. Let's talk to open up our other line for one of our other calls, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Wayne, how you doing this evening, my brother?
Just fine. How is everyone on that end?
All right.
Hey, Wayne.
Hi, how you doing, Kay?
Right now that I'm on, right.
Yeah, well, I know. Technical problems happen, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
In the age of Trump, you should be grateful.
That's right. The internet, definitely. We should be grateful for what we get, huh?
Yeah, exactly. You know.
You know.
There's just a short story. A friend of mine, this guy actually works for me. His son was coming to the country from Trinidad last week, and he's got a 10-year visa. And he flew, I believe it might have been JetBlue or maybe another carrier, not to promote them. But he leaves Port of Spain, the flight stops at Miami, and then on to New York. $1,200 mm-hmm. ticket. Gets to Miami, and ICE turns him back to Port of Spain. And I just say to myself, this guy has done nothing. He just wants to come to this country to earn a living. And, you know, it just amazes me how many stories I hear like this every day. And I'm not exaggerating. Every day you go out there, and it just amazes me how people are just being, you know, their lives have changed. So at least he hasn't messed with the freedom of speech yet. But, you know.
He's trying.
I just wonder. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, especially with the Mueller report coming out and all that stuff. We didn't talk enough about it last week. If we did, I think it just came out, though.
Yeah.
It came out Thursday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So,
right.
No,
so,
we didn't. It wasn't out then last week.
That whole situation. Go ahead. You were saying?
No, it's amazing, and we expected a certain amount of this back and forth, and now he's got a little temper tantrum with Twitter because he suspects that they dropped many of his followers on Twitter, and I guess because Barack Obama has doubled the amount of people following him, you know, he's annoyed, but it just shows how childish and infantile, you know, the behavior and you know, how egotistical, you know. And we worked with some big egos back in the day, Kay.
I'm
not going to call any names.
Yeah.
But we worked with
please.
Some people who, you know, really had no odor, if you know what I'm talking about. But Trump.
Don't go there, Wayne.
Trump.
We'll start naming names here, you know me.
No, I'm not getting into that tonight. I think I said too much last week, you know. And I'll have to talk to you about that.
Well, I'm putting it all over the air.
You want to finish your point?
Yeah.
You want to finish your thought?
You're about to get away from that.
No. And the thing is, I didn't have dinner, so, you know, my mouth will move like anything, you know. Just usually when that happens, I have a problem. But, You know, I was on the phone with your good friend Glenda Taylor just now, and I have to thank you.
Yes, you were.
Okay,
yeah,
she's going to send me a copy of the book. So we were talking for a long time there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I, you know, I'm grateful to skip dinner to talk to her. So that's it.
Yeah.
What about Byron?
You know all the books that she has out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so as much as people would like to hear us talk on the phone with ourselves, I wanted to talk. You know, just
catch the Judas.
That's interesting to someone that might be clicking in, but you know, I'm just really kind of tripping this week on our president here and his just kind of just a straight gangster kind of mentality there. You know?
Oh.
And just, you know, here's the thing that I was thinking about that I wanted to say. Everybody keeps on, and I keep hearing, and the problem with, you know, we know the problem with the Democrats, we're just kind of really soft about things, right? I got you. And really soft about things. But so the thing is that everybody anticipates that the president, that Trump or Republicans are going to do the right thing and say, you know, if this happens, if we get to this level, they'll do that. And kind of watching Chris Matthews talk about this stuff, and I kind of always have had the perspective that, no, they're not going to do anything. They're not going to play by any rules. They don't care about, you know, I mean, we're looking at a guy that, you know, he's basically okay with breaking the law. And just his perspective about, you know, he wants to sue the Congress for investigating. I mean, it's just, you know, he's not right, obviously, that's what happens when you have that extreme deadly narcissism in there. I know Mr. Junius Williams has some strong opinions about the whole political spectrum of what's going on now. How you doing, Mr. Williams?
Hey, how you doing?
All right. Sorry for the technical difficulty earlier. Glad we got you through. And just talking about your boy, you know, the guy, the current squatter in the White House. We also have one of our co-hosts, Wayne Gilman, on. I'm sure that you probably have heard of Wayne or he's been on the show with us before. So
and I've heard of Julius. How you doing, Mr. Williams?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
I guess okay.
We're all right.
So what? What's your opinions there about our current situation with the Mueller and all of that stuff?
Well, there's certainly enough information there to sustain prosecution for obstruction of justice. And I don't understand why Mueller didn't just go ahead and say that. He had the intent, and he did react of interfering with an investigation. So that, to me, is what the law is all about. Now, the Democrats are the ones I'm worried about.
Right.
Because I don't know if they have the spine for this kind of confrontation. I hope that they go as far as they can with it, because the American people are listening. I think Trump has shown people, and shown very well, that he's going to be the one who's going to lead. So the Democrats have to be the ones who do the same thing. I don't agree with the way he's leading, but he certainly is. He's done what he says he was going to do. Now the Democrats have to stand for something and take back the leadership mantle in the country. What people aren't going to vote for?
Right. I certainly agree with leading. Well, I guess being proactive, I would refer to it more. He's certainly been proactive, and I guess in that leading is his Republican Party, or took the leadership of the Republican Party from those rank and file and traditional Republican types. I was just saying to Wayne, you know, people keep waiting, and you keep hearing some of these Democrats, and that's my very issue with the Democrats too. There's no spine, there's no anything. I don't even hear any. I mean, you know, the language. I just want to hear someone like Alan Grayson, you know, just one of them, just to have that type of craziness in our party too.
or just the expression that we're willing to, you know, we're willing to go to the same lengths you are. If, in fact, you're dealing with an individual who's not going to abide by the laws or the rules, it's like a boxing match, right? Like like Floyd, when he hit the guy, knocked the guy out after the guy headbutted him. And then, you know, rules will keep you up. You know, if that's the way we're playing, okay. Rules will keep your hands up at all times. And people got upset about Floyd. I always use this as an example. But the guy, you know, broke a rule beforehand. The ref said, okay, you guys made up fight. And then the guy still wants to kind of, you know, make believe or give Floyd a hug. And Floyd punched him in the jaw and knocked him out. And people said he wasn't ready. And my thing is that the ref said he was ready. The ref said fight. And the rules of the fight are keep your hands up at all times. And that's what the Democrats are not doing. We're not keeping our hands up at all times in this fight with Trump and the Republicans. You know, and I'm waiting for that, too. Somebody is willing to go to those, you know, just to, you know, at least talk bad to them.
Yeah. Now, Junius, well, you know, the name of your new book is Rise Up Newark, right? Is the name of your new book?
It's
Rise Up
Newark? It's not a book. That's a website. It's
called
RiseUpNewark.com, and it's a history of the black empowerment experience in Newark.
Uh-huh.
So if you want to go all the way back to when we had people who were free, just freed from slavery, and, for example, they set up a house on the Underground Railroad, which is a field now that has been named after Frederick Douglass. Well, Frederick Douglass was the friend of the Thompson King family, who set up this house on the Underground Railroad on the Rutgers campus. It's right there on the Rutgers campus now, and that's the at 30 Warren Street. So that's the
Newark campus
all the way. That's the Newark campus at Rutgers, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of thing we trace all the way up to the election of Ken Gibson. We go as far as 1970 with that website. Rise Up Newark or Rise Up Newark, you can get there either way, .com. And we're also in Detroit. We're going to open up. We're going to have the first part of the Detroit website, RiseUpDetroit.net. I'm sorry, .org. And that's going to be coming online on May 14th.
Uh-huh. Do you know what we need? I'll tell you right now. Remember the March on Washington? All right?
Mm-hmm.
We need to do another March on Washington in all the cities around, you know, in this area. And, you know, maybe we'll catch on, of course, country, because we have a dangerous person in the White House. And he is going crazy, and he will lead our. You heard of climate change? Okay, now but that has to be dealt with. If we're here, if Earth is here, but to deal with it. But absolutely, we need another march. You have Rise Up Newark.
Oh,
okay.
Let me just ask you about the website you're talking about. So these are websites that are kind of interactive and historical platforms for people to go and explore the history of both of the cities?
That's right. We've also gotten the Newark School Board. The Newark School District has accepted a teacher curriculum, a curriculum for high school students based on that website, and teachers are using that now.
I see.
It's the first history of Newark that's been in the school district since the early 1900s.
Wow.
And of course, our position, our interpretation of history is going to be a lot different from what the kids were taught at that time. We look at the other ethnic groups. We look at the Irish. We look at the Italians. We look at the Native Americans. All of that's on the website in part one. But we take the story along the line of what was happening to the African American population, which was at the bottom socially and politically and economically. What happened on our way toward empowerment, starting with that with what the King family did with that house on the Underground Railroad. Newark was a hotbed of abolition.
Oh yeah.
One does not know that regularly, ordinarily. But that's
I didn't know that.
Why Frederick Douglass came here.
And was Rutgers? When was Rutgers founded? I'm just wondering if that connection. You said it's near the Warren Street is what near where the Rutgers campus or what Rutgers campus is around Warren, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know when the Rutgers move started. I think Rutgers started in 1876 down in New Brunswick. So this was going on at that time, but it was not in Rutgers' hand. The site was not owned by Rutgers. This was in the hands of the King family until 1936, I believe.
I see. And they were part of the network of abolitionists at the time and freed. Were they, the King family was a white family, were they abolitionists or they were?
They were black.
They were a black family.
Mr. Thompson, Mr. Thompson was a stagecoach driver. And his master, when he died, allowed Thomas Thompson, to keep the stagecoach and the horses. So Thomas Thompson, at that time, was the richest African-American in the town. His daughter got married to a man named Jacob King. Jacob King built this house, and he and his wife were the people who managed that house on the Underground Railroad. And it is my theory that one of the ways in which the African Americans got free was to hide out in Thomas Thompson's stagecoach, because he had the trust of the white community to take and go anywhere he wanted to. So he could go down south and maybe met up with Harriet Tubman. He could go over to Jersey City, where there was a well-known a whole network of safe houses over there. He could go up to Canada. He could take them anywhere. I don't know exactly how these people got away, but that was one of the ways they started.
And obviously that made him a very valuable or key asset person to have in the network of abolitionists and freedom fighters back then, trying to get people to freedom. I'm going to bring in our other call. Go ahead.
I was going to say, this was shared with me by a woman named Teresa Vega, who is mostly Puerto Rican, but she shared her history with us. She's a Puerto Rican, black, Native American. She traces her ancestry through genealogy, but then she turned into a historian because she found out all of these things. The other thing about this King family that we should know is that they founded the first Presbyterian church here. Actually, it was the second Presbyterian, but it was the first black Presbyterian. They founded the AME Zion Church, which was the first African-American church here in Newark. And they founded the colored school. All the King family, there were several brothers who were active. The African-American school, or the colored school, was eventually run by a man who came to town from Philadelphia, who became the principal and stayed there until 1945, I believe. He was there, 45 years, I'm not sure. So that was when they integrated the schools in Newark, and black kids didn't go to the public schools.
I see. Let me bring in our other co-host, Byron Saunders. Byron, I'm sure you've been listening to this fascinating history about Newark. I didn't know about it. If you don't know if you had any questions for Mr. Junius Williams, but certainly I didn't know that Newark was a stop on the Underground Railroad. Certainly, that's some great history.
So. Well, you know that because I'm in Los Angeles right now. I'm back out here in L.A. For my show, the Fannie Lou Hamer story. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. But indeed, one of the things that we're discovering as African Americans along the Heritage Trail, and that's important because the Interior Department identifies the Heritage Trail, the Underground Railroad network, as part of our United States responsibilities for acknowledging. Interior Department has money. to establish and set up these sites so that when you come to Newark and you're taking the African American History Trail as a heritage trail, you can identify where those Underground Railroad sites were or still are. And that's critical, because how do we sustain? How do we protect these sites? You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, developers will come in and just mow them over, and then there's not even a marker where there once stood a very significant part of our network to freedom. That's important. So I really salute the efforts to maintain the integrity of those sites, identify them with markers paid for by the federal government, because these are important historic moments to our nation. And if we lose them, it's like whitewashing history.
Exactly.
Very true. Thank you for that idea. I'm going to talk to the people at Rutgers about that.
So, I mean, think about it. You've got the museum in Cincinnati, which is the Underground Railroad Museum. You've got all up and down the East Coast sites where it was a safe house. Some of them still existed. Some of them were churches. We forget how some of our sites are churches that were really, truly where we believed in the sanctity of the house of worship as a place for those who were escaping tyranny.
As you mentioned that, Byron, I'm reminded of church in Brooklyn Heights. It's a Baptist church, I believe. And the white folks who were very much concerned back in the day about how blacks were being treated in the South, they actually have quarters below the church to show where, you know, the runaway slaves stayed just to escape, you know, the persecution that they were suffering from. And then you have neighborhoods that developed as a result of the Underground Railroad, like Weeksville, Brooklyn, you know. And a lot of Jersey's history has been misplaced, because not just in Newark alone, but I think in many of the outer areas of New Jersey, you know, this talk. I'm trying to think of what town in particular, but I remember I was in conversation with Mal Wolfhook about it some years ago in southwest corner of New Jersey.
Right. I was just getting ready to say, in South Jersey, there is definitely a site or a town that still, I believe, exists to this day because of its stop or involvement with the Underground Railroad.
You know, I did know the name of it, but I cannot, I can't think of it right now.
What were we going to say, Mr. Williams? We can't really hear you that well.
I think it's Lawnside, New Jersey, is a black, which has a history of escaped slaves and setting up the town, and I'm sure there's lots of record down there.
Yeah, that's around the shore.
You said it's called Lawnside?
Lawnside.
L-A-W.
Lawnside. Right. Now
L-A-W.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah, and yes, it is.
Right, right. Yeah, that, I mean, that's like you're saying, Byron. I mean, so much of our history, I mean, so much of just the history in Newark, as you can, as anybody would attest to riding through downtown Newark as they, as it's going through, I guess, their revitalization in a lot of places, a little bit of gentrifying going on, but I'm sure you've noticed that, Mr. Williams, and I'm sure you probably have raised your concerns about the historical importance of places in Newark and some of the places certainly that were part of the African-American history and the development of black power from a political standpoint in Newark. You know, we don't want that to get bulldozed over. And in the new Newark jumping off, you know, we want to preserve the history of the Newark and the people that built the city. You know?
Yep, absolutely. We've got a lot of markers that have been bulldozed over. For example, that church that I mentioned, that Presbyterian church, was up in the area that a man named Hub Nanian developed. And the church was still there. It was vacant. And they tore it down except for a couple of the pillars. But you've got a little archway there in commemoration of that Presbyterian church. But the church itself is gone. It started out as Plain Street Presbyterian Church, and then it went over into the neighborhood, and then that's where it ended.
Hmm.
Now that school, that colored school, is still exists, and it was closed. The Board of Education sold it to a developer, but I understand somebody told me that they got it back. So it's there. It should be used right now. It's used by a group that's concerned with the history of the new public schools. They keep their records there. But
what building is that? Is there a building there?
Mm-hmm. It's up there. I'm trying
on
to
High
Street?
The street.
It's near 280, Route 280.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. If you look at the one of the exits, they're coming from east to west. It's kind of like down in that little valley where the colonnades. You remember, you know, the colonnade?
Yeah, it's colonnade.
It's right
mm-hmm.
there at the colonnade. Right. It's right next to the colonnade. There's
mm-hmm.
a church there, too. I don't remember the denomination. I think there may have been a Presbyterian church there, too. But the school was there. It's closed up now.
I think that was a Presbyterian church, if I remember
mm-hmm.
correctly. I'm trying my best to think. Having taught in Newark for and lived in Newark for a number of years. But there's so much I've forgotten.
You know, a lot of people don't know of Newark being, the third oldest city in the country, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
And a lot of people, I didn't know that until within the last, certainly mm-hmm. within the last 5 to 10 years. And that in itself is a testament, you know, I mean, being around probably one of the original almost I guess would be one of the original 13 colonies, or even before the 13 colonies were formed. And, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of people don't realize that history about Newark, you know. I mean, we've been pigeonholed to the negative image of Newark that seemed to have been created once the black people started really kind of running the city.
Well, I doubt that it had the name Newark at that time. It probably was something else.
Yeah. No, it was called Newark. Newark used to be
right.
as large.
For how long of
a
period of time? Junius? For how long of a period of time?
Newark celebrated its 350th anniversary in 2016.
Wow.
Right. So
you count back
350 years. That's how long it's been Newark. The Puritans
right.
were from Connecticut, and they came down in boats because they were dissatisfied with whatever was going on in the church up there in Connecticut. And they were looking for some place to start a new colony. So they came into this little bay, Newark Bay, saw all this nice forest, met the Native Americans who were calm and peaceful, unlike the Native Americans in Connecticut. And so they said, we're going to give you $700, and you're going to give us this land. So, of course, the Native Americans went along with it because they were the peaceful folks, Lenape, Lenape, they were called. And
Lenape.
Yeah.
Lenape.
They were part of the Algonquin Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
The other Native Americans in the Algonquin Nation thought of these guys as kind of soft. They
mm-hmm.
wouldn't fight. They were the peacemakers. And so the Europeans took advantage of them and eventually moved them out, took land that was the size at that time of Essex County. So, you know, there's probably about 100 towns in Essex County right now. And as they got mad with each other, they split off and said, we're going to be Livingston, we're going to be East Orange, we're going to be Orange. And they left Newark. And now Newark is what it is today.
Thanks to who?
Well, thanks to the white people who came down here and took it. That's how the geography was formed.
Mm-hmm,
but in
mm-hmm.
terms of the politics, well, all those different ethnic groups start coming in and added their flavor to the soup. And all along, black folks from Greece and Japan, and they left us there until about the 1950s when we started getting. We fought for the election of the first African American councilman, Irvine Turner, who I'm sure you know, Kay.
No, Tell me again, the first African American mayor?
Irvine Turner.
Irvine Turner, yeah.
Irvine,
oh, yeah.
No. First councilman.
First councilman, right.
Irving Turner.
Right.
Yeah.
Irvine, yep.
Irvine,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Irvine Turner.
I don't remember his face, but I heard the name. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, you didn't know him? Oh, okay. I thought you knew him through your connection with the political operatives here in the city.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't remember a lot of the politics during that time. All I remember is, you know, the racism involved with, you know, the different public schools in New Jersey and all around the
mm-hmm.
country.
Right.
So.
And the name of this website is Rise Up North, or Rise Up North.
Rise Up.
Right.
And is that going to be the Rise Up, right, RiseUpNorth.com? And mm-hmm. is that going to be so... the Rise Up North, is that going to be the same when you do the website for Detroit as well? Is it going to be RiseUpNorth.com Detroit or
it's going to be Rise Up Detroit.
That's Rise Up Detroit.
It's become Rise Up Newark.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing the chapter for it's going to be revealed. It's going online, you know, on May 14th. Going to be out there at Wayne State. They're our partner out there, just as Rutgers was our partner here. We're going to reveal the third chapter. It's taking a little longer out of Detroit because, I'm not there. My researcher has not been able to do as much heat out there as he was able to do here. So we're taking it a little slow, but we definitely have the third chapter, which talks about the rebellion and the politics after the rebellion on the way up to electing Coleman Young.
Mm-hmm.
First African American
Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. I'm sorry, Kay. I was just listening to what he was saying. I may know someone could be of some help to you with regard to Detroit. One of my relatives was press secretary for the late Coleman Young, and I believe her ex-husband. Do you know Lonnie Peek?
I know that name. Yes.
Yeah. He had a lot to do with Wayne State, and
mm-hmm.
his ex-wife is my first cousin, and she's a publicist. So, if I'm certain she'd be interested in helping you along with that, if I could get a number or off air or
all right,
on
well,
air.
I'm on. Yeah, not on the air, but Kato,
right. We can make sure you guys are connected in.
And email. So yeah.
Right.
I'm definitely interested in that.
Okay. Very good.
And
Kay,
also,
you can pass my information on to,
right, we'll
to
do.
Dr.
Yeah.
Williams.
Please
and,
do.
Yeah. And Junius, listen,
mm-hmm.
I still have relatives in Detroit, Michigan. So I'm
mm-hmm.
going to be contacting them. I need to talk to you later and get some more information, and then I'll find out some information. I don't know how much involved they are in politics, but certainly they're involved in history.
Well,
so.
I think Dennis Archer.
They may want to come to, or anybody else listening, they may want to come to the opening ceremony we're going to have on May 14th from 4 to 6. But what I'll do, I'll send you a flyer.
Please do.
Okay. I'll send so that you can announce it on the air and send it to, both of you can send it to your people.
Yeah.
And they can come to this grand opening.
I certainly will.
Launch.
You know, thank
it's
you for
opening,
saying that
launch.
Because I'd like that.
All right.
I'd like to let them know.
All right, Mr. Junius Williams, I want to thank you for coming on and talk to us about Rise Up North. And we're going to be looking for RiseUpNorth.com, looking for RiseUpDetroit.com.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's not .com in Detroit, it's
.org. .org, RiseUp.org. Rise up,
we couldn't
rise
get
Detroit.
.com, unfortunately.
I see. I just like the aspect of, you know, what we're doing with the technology now in terms of our telling our stories, and a lot of our history, even on the way some of it is being shared as shoddy as things have turned out to be in realms like Facebook and other things with all of this hacking and stuff like that. But there's been a lot of positive things that have been shared by us as African Americans and a lot of history that's floating around out there, at least for the
uneducated about our history and unaware about even the first level of our history, that we can start waking some more people up, I guess, basically what I'm trying to say. So this is definitely helping to do
that.
That's
what we're
doing. Thank you again. Mr. Junius Williams, we will be talking to you soon, sir, and we'll make sure that
you
and Mr. Wayne Gilman connect.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate
you.
Thanks all for having me. Okay. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Take care.
You're welcome, Junius. Talk to you later.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Yeah, wow, that's so terrific.
Yeah,
that's
that sounds good. Maybe Byron, while you're out there, you could do the Rise Up West Coast, L.A.
Yeah.
L.A.'s got one of those
that's
type of histories.
That's right. That's why
you know
we're out
thing,
here.
There's another
Rise
thing that
up.
I'd like to do.
Yeah.
There's another thing that I would like to do, you know, on the history of black colleges in the South.
Yeah.
You know, Hampton University, Virginia State, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, those are
the... Let's find out the history and if they're still in existence and so forth and so on. And I'm ashamed, it's a shame to say that I have not been in touch with, you know, relatives who are still in a couple of those states.
Mm-hmm. But the thing, I want to just make that point, Byron, with you about L.A., a lot of people don't know that the city of Los Angeles was founded by quite a few African-Americans, freed slaves, and Native Americans, I believe that's what it was founded by. And you know, the way the image of L.A. has developed, you would never know that.
No, I didn't know that at all. Yeah.
In fact, on the state flag, there is a mulatto woman who is credited for being one of the founders of California. And so you never would know it, not understanding or having been taught that history as one of the 50 states. You see, that used to be some of the things we learned in school in geography.
Sure.
We learned the capitals of all the states. We knew their flower. We knew their state flag. We knew their song. We knew the thing that made them significant. Is that being taught anymore?
It probably is.
Yes, it is.
That aspect probably is. We all learned that, but we didn't know none of that black stuff. I'll tell you that.
That's right.
We sure didn't know. We might have
known
what the flag
about.
Looked like. They probably, in California, they probably knew what the whole flag looked like, except that part where that mulatto lady was on.
Listen, I used to teach school in the elementary school up to the fifth to sixth grade. So I started to teach a couple college classes. But anyway, it was a lot of history. A lot of history.
And just Mr. Williams, like you were saying, and, you know, the Fannie Lou Hamer story, all of that. You know, a lot of these young folks, they don't really know the connection with the history. I think probably the drawback with technology, as much as has been an advantage and a plus, is that people are really paying attention to, you can get distracted with stuff that it's not important and doesn't make any sense. You know, with people getting distracted with the Twitters and the pop aspect of the social media.
Yeah, and you know one thing regarding, you know, black history, there's so much black history.
Right.
And there's so many black women in history who made a real difference, you know, in this country.
Right.
And I'm ashamed to say that I don't remember a lot of it, but I have the books here.
Well, the books, that's what I'm talking about, the technology that is really...
So it makes it easier to study black history.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Getting back to the point I was making, and maybe you guys want to comment on that, it's easy to get distracted, you know, and that keeps making me think of the whole kind of hacking thing that went down with the election and how, you know, all of these fake people were created or fake organizations.
Yeah. And it is very upsetting to know, because it seems like so much of our history is being erased slowly, you know, and a lot of the millennials are not really aware of some of the struggles that we've gone through, you know, just to allow them to be as successful as they are today. They hear certain things, you know, and may know some things, you know, from maybe whatever their parents may tell them, but... you know, we're living in such a divisive, polarized society now, and a lot of them that are learning for the first time what the presidency is all about, they see who's in charge, And it's just sad. You know, it's like a poor example that we're giving to the world. And it's got to change.
You are absolutely right, Wayne. You know that? Because the fact that, you know, we as broadcasters, we're really historians. And it's up to us to keep our history alive.
Right, yeah.
So black radio is very important.
And that's
and
what I was trying to allude to last week. You know, I mean, the deal is, and I'm not saying that there's so many different institutions that we created, some visionary, regardless of who that person might have been and how they got the funds together to start it. You know, there should be some sort of continuation of that. No one else should have no other community should have the right to control our intellectual property.
Exactly.
Something we've worked on.
And
I just, you know, I understand the nature of business to a certain extent. You know, I didn't go to Wharton School of Business. But the bottom line is that, you know, we've got to look at ourselves whenever we have, you know, these empires that we've developed. I didn't get a chance to watch this past week, and I understand there was a commemoration television effort on Motown and its 60th anniversary. The fact that that's gone. Glenda Taylor just told me tonight that Johnson Publication, they just sold the last part of that empire recently. And all these institutions that we once had that shaped opinion, that controlled politics to a certain degree. You know, we're losing, and we're about to lose. I was in conversation with Al Sharpton's attorney, Michael Hardy, and I understand that we're on the precipice of losing again WLIB, but this time losing it.
Well, too bad, but it's so, King Thomas and Live. It's still in existence.
Yeah.
And is Matt?
So why are we? What's the
money
finish of that story there with that, Wayne? I'm sorry.
No. I was in conversation with Reverend Sharpton's attorney, Michael Hardy, who runs the local office of the National Action Network. I happened to attend a street renaming in Harlem this past weekend for Ozzy Davis and Ruby Dee. It was the day before Easter on 125th Street. And we saw a lot of the old faces, people that we knew. And we were talking about in fact, his thing is the very same thing that, when we were talking about the whole issue with Trump and the losses that we have in terms of, you know, having a balanced playing field in which to fight him in 2020. We're losing our voices here. I mean, there's no reason why in this town that there isn't a 24-hour station, a regular radio station that can be devoted to this kind of dialogue that we used to do. And I was just amazed to hear, because I've heard a lot of talk about this before, but the very station that, you know, made our names back in the day is now being lost again. And I don't know who it's being sold to, but I don't think it's somebody of color. You know.
Yeah.
So
we got like a minute left, but you know, that just caused me to think another thing, an aspect of how many during the course of the years the LIB's been in existence and all these organizations, is how many more black millionaires and people on that level to buy radio stations, do that type of business, have there been developed? I mean, has it been commensurate with the growth of wealth in the United States? You know, is that a part of the reason why we're losing our voices in many of these media outlets? You know, the papers, the radio stations, TV stations. But we got to go. It's down to 30 seconds. I want to say thank you to our brother Wayne Gilman for calling in. Byron Saunders, brother Byron, you still out there?
I'm still out here in the City of Angels. Got a show tonight. We had a great opening. Fannie Lou Hamer, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. The mayor of Inglewood came to the show last night. So we're great. Peace and love.
Great. Byron.
All right, Byron. Yeah. Talk to you again next week. Thank you, Brother Byron.
Yes, sir.
Take care.
Yes, sir.
All right, Wayne Gilman. Real quick, sir, thanks again, once again, as always.
Thank you.
Great.
Keep the faith. That's all I could say.
Thank you, sir. All right, take care. Talk to you soon. This has been the Kay Thompson Live Show. I'm Citizen Payne, and you are?
Kay Thompson, everyone. Join us every week, every Monday, Wednesday, rather, from 8 to 9 p.m. on Kay Thompson Live.